All right, buckle up for this one. You ready? We've got a landscaper, a runaway riding mower, a creek, and well, pretty bad accident. Amputated fingers, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. This is Norton V. Snapper. It went all the way to the 11th Circuit back in 1983. This guy, James Norton, was using a Snapper riding mower, got hurt really bad, and it really changed the game for product liability law. So, question is, could a missing safety feature really cause an injury like that? Or was it just a, a freak accident?
Well, what's interesting in this case is it really all boils down to this thing called a dead man's control, a safety feature that wasn't on that snapper mower.
Okay, dead man's control sounds a little ominous. What is
Yeah.
that exactly?
So think of like a, a motorcycle's kill switch or the safety clip on a treadmill. Same basic idea.
Okay.
A dead man's control, it's supposed to automatically shut off the machine if the operator loses control. Let's go. So in this case, Norton's lawyers, they argued that the snapper mower not having this feature, that's what made it so dangerous.
All right, so back to that day in 83. Norton's clearing leaves near a creek. Mower starts sliding backwards down an incline, applies the brakes, still crashes into the creek, and then his hand,
Yeah.
it ends up in the plates, four fingers
Gone.
gone. And it's not exactly clear how it happened.
Right.
That's another layer here, right?
Exactly. Makes you think, doesn't it? Because a lot of the case relies on just figuring things out from the evidence they had.
It makes you think, wouldn't applying the brakes stop the blades too?
I would think, right.
But guess not on this mower.
Well, that's what Norton's lawyers argued. They said that missing dead man's control, that was a critical safety feature, could have prevented the whole thing. They actually sued Snapper under three different legal theories: negligence, warranty claims, and strict liability.
Okay.
First two dismissed. So it all came down to strict liability.
Okay. Strict liability for those of us who aren't legal eagles. What does that actually mean in this case?
So imagine you get food poisoning from a restaurant.
Right.
They can be held responsible even if they didn't mean to give you bad food.
Right.
Same idea with strict liability. The manufacturer is on the hook for damages if a product's defective, even if they weren't careless making it. So in Norton's case, he didn't have to prove Snapper was negligent, just that the mower was unreasonably dangerous without that dead man's control.
So, did the jury buy that argument?
They did. Case went to trial. Jury sided with Norton, found Snapper 80% liable.
Wow.
They agreed that, yeah, the missing dead man's control made the mower unreasonably dangerous. But here's where it gets crazy. The judge issued a JNOV. That's judgment notwithstanding the verdict. Overturned the whole thing.
Wait, a JNOV? That's not very common, is it?
Not at all. Basically, for a judge to issue a JNOV, they have to be convinced that no reasonable jury could have reached that verdict. They're basically saying, nope, the jury got it wrong.
So the judge really thought there was no way a reasonable jury could side with Norton.
That's right.
Wow. So what happened next?
Well, Norton's lawyers weren't giving up. They appealed the JNOV to the 11th Circuit. And that set the stage for a big showdown, like jury versus judge, who has the final say.
Oh man, okay.
Yeah.
I'm hooked. Did the 11th Circuit agree with the JNOV or did they side with the jury?
Well, the 11th Circuit actually overturned the JNOV, reinstated the jury's verdict.
No way.
Yep, held Snapper responsible for 80% of the
Okay,
damages.
that's huge. What was their reasoning?
So basically, the 11th Circuit emphasized just how high the bar is for a JNOV. They said the judge can't just disagree with the jury.
Right.
They have to prove the jury's decision was completely unreasonable, like no basis in the evidence from the trial.
So you're saying the judge overstepped?
That's what they were saying. The 11th Circuit also highlighted that in Florida, determining if a product's unreasonably dangerous, that's usually for the jury to decide, not the judge. And that's where this whole risk utility analysis comes in.
Okay, let's talk about that. Risk utility test. What is that?
In Florida, they use this risk utility test to figure out if a product is unreasonably dangerous.
Okay.
And there are five factors they look at. The jury weighs the evidence and then decides how those factors apply to the case.
Okay, so those five factors, I'm guessing they were pretty important to the jury's decision and also to the 11th Circuit's decision to overturn the JNOV. So break it down for us. What are they?
Well, the first factor is all about whether there were safer alternative designs available when the product was made.
Okay.
And get this, Snapper. They'd actually filed a patent in 1980 for a blade-stopping technology.
So they had a safer design, but didn't use it.
Looks like it. And that patent, it became a big piece of evidence, contradicted their whole argument that a dead man's control wasn't possible back then.
So their own internal documents came back to bite them.
You got it.
What about the other factors in this risk utility test?
So the second factor looks at how obvious the danger was. Now, Snapper, they argued any reasonable person knows a running lawnmower is dangerous.
I mean, yeah, they have blades. It's kind of obvious.
Right. But Norton's lawyers, they said, no, no, it's not the blades themselves. It's the lack of that safety mechanism to stop them in an emergency.
Right.
Consumers wouldn't necessarily know that the blades would keep spinning even after applying the brakes.
Yeah, like you don't expect your car engine to keep running at full speed when you slam on the brakes.
Exactly.
Okay, makes sense. What's the third factor?
The third one looks at what the public expects about a product safety. You know, generally people expect that riding mowers, especially those meant for consumers, should have some kind of fail-safe to prevent this kind of thing.
So even if the danger of the blades is obvious, the fact that there was no safety feature that went against what people would reasonably expect in terms of safety.
Right.
Got it.
Yeah.
What about the last two factors?
Okay, so the fourth factor, that looks at warnings and instructions. Did they give adequate warnings?
Uh-huh.
While Snapper probably did have some warnings about the blades, Norton's lawyers could argue that those warnings didn't cover the specific risk of not having a dead man's control.
Okay, so even with warnings, the missing safety feature was still a big problem. All right, last one.
The fifth and final factor, it examines whether adding the safety feature was even doable, you know, without messing with the product's functionality or making it too expensive.
Right.
And again, Snapper's patent from 1980. It showed that a blade-stopping tech was possible and probably wouldn't cost a ton to add to production.
This case is getting wilder by the minute. So it seems like Snapper's own paperwork was used against them to prove they could have made a safer product.
Pretty much. And the 11th Circuit, looking at all of this, you know, their analysis of the evidence and why they upheld the jury's verdict, that had a major impact on product liability law, especially in Florida. But we'll get into that in part two of this deep dive.
Oh, I can't wait. We're just getting started, folks. Stay tuned. All right, welcome back. We are knee deep in Norton v. Snapper, and this case is really making us think about product liability law. So before the break, the 11th Circuit had just overturned the judge's JNOV and basically said, nope, the jury's decision stands, which means Snapper was back on the hook for Norton's injuries.
Right. And the thing is, the 11th Circuit wasn't just like disagreeing with the judge, you know, they were actually setting some boundaries between the judge and the jury, like who gets to decide what.
Okay. So it's about more than just this one case then, right? It's about like the bigger picture of how the courts work. So tell me more about that. What were they trying to say?
Well, they highlighted three main things that they thought the judge got wrong. Okay, so first they said the judge had gone too far, like reweighing the evidence,
mm-hmm.
instead of just checking if there was enough evidence to back up the jury's decision.
So it's like the judge was trying to be another juror or something. I thought the jury was supposed to be the one who decides what the facts are.
Exactly. The 11th Circuit basically emphasized that the jury's role is to weigh the evidence and then decide who they believe. And the judge can't just toss out their decision unless it's, like, completely unsupported, you know?
Hmm. Sounds like they were really sticking up for the jury. Okay, so what were the other two issues the 11th Circuit had with the judge's ruling?
Well, the second thing was that they said the judge shouldn't have taken that risk utility analysis away from the jury.
Right.
Remember, in Florida, it's the jury that's supposed to figure out if a product's unreasonably dangerous.
So even though the judge is, like, the legal expert, they can't just decide that on their own.
Nope. The 11th Circuit made it clear that the jury is the one who hears all the evidence and the experts and stuff.
Right.
It's their job to use the law and apply it to the facts of the case. The judge can only step in if there's like a clear mistake about the law.
Makes sense. It's all about checks and balances, right?
Okay.
Okay, so what was the third thing the 11th Circuit had a problem with?
That would be causation. Snapper's lawyers argued you can't be 100% sure that the missing dead man's control actually caused Norton's injuries.
So basically, Snapper was saying, yeah, maybe your mower didn't have that safety feature, but how do we know it would have made a difference?
Yeah, pretty much. But the 11th Circuit, they cited some legal precedents and said you don't need absolute certainty to prove causation. You just need to show it's highly probable that things would have been different if that safety feature had been there.
Okay, but how do you actually prove that? Mm-hmm. It's not like you can rewind time and see what would have happened with the dead man's control, right?
Right, of course not. But you can kind of put the pieces together using logic and expert opinions. You remember Norton's experts?
Yeah.
They said a dead man's control could stop those blades in less than a second.
Uh-huh.
And then they calculated that the mower slid for about 3 seconds before it crashed.
So even with a slight delay in stopping the blades, Norton's hand might have been spared.
Yeah, exactly. So the 11th Circuit, they looked at all of that, the timeline, the experts, and decided that, yeah, the jury was right to connect those dots and conclude that the missing dead man's control was a big factor in what happened to Norton.
So they were basically saying that based on what they saw and heard, the jury made a reasonable decision.
Right.
Okay, so this case really shows how important those expert opinions are and how even without like a smoking gun, you can still use evidence to prove things.
Yeah, absolutely. This whole case had a big impact on product liability law, especially in Florida.
Oh, yeah.
Because it showed that even if it's not 100% clear exactly how an injury happened, a company can still be held responsible if they didn't do what they should have to make their product safer.
This case started out as a lawnmower accident. But it's turned into this legal drama with all these twists and turns.
It really has.
What are some takeaways from all this? For lawyers and anyone else who's interested in product safety, what should we be learning from Norton v. Snapper?
Well, first of all, it shows just how important expert testimony is in these types of cases. I mean, without experts, juries would have a hard time understanding all the technical details and making decisions about whether a product's safe or not.
So any lawyers out there listening, if you're dealing with complicated products, you better find some experts who can explain it all to the jury. What else?
It's a big warning to companies, too. Be careful what you put in writing, because your own internal documents can come back to bite you. Remember Snapper and that patent for their blade-stopping technology?
What?
Yeah, that was a big deal, because it showed they knew New W about a safer design, but chose not to use it.
Lesson learned. Be careful what you patent. Anything else?
This case also really drives home a key point about product liability.
Cool.
Companies can be held responsible for injuries even if nobody messed up while making the product.
So it's not just about proving someone made a mistake on the assembly line.
Right.
It's about showing that the product itself was dangerous because of the way it was designed or because it was missing a safety feature.
Exactly. And this case really shows how strict liability can help protect people from dangerous products.
Right.
It also shows how this risk utility analysis, you know, with its five factors, gives us a way to look at whether a product is designed well enough and whether it has the safety features it should.
This has been super informative, mm-hmm. honestly. I feel like I have a much better grasp on product liability now and how cases like this can hinge on things like expert opinions and circumstantial evidence.
I'm glad to hear that.
Before we move on, though, you mentioned earlier that this case had a particular impact on product liability in Florida. What was it about this case that made it so important for Florida specifically?
Well, Norton v. Snapper really solidified the use of that risk utility test we talked about in Florida's product liability cases. Remember, that test isn't like a national standard. It varies from state to state.
Oh, right. Okay.
So what the 11th Circuit did here was basically give Florida courts some clear guidance on how to use that test. They also emphasized that it should be the jury who decides these tricky questions about the facts.
So this case didn't just affect the people involved. It actually shaped how product liability cases are handled in Florida going forward. It's amazing how a case about a lawnmower can have such a ripple effect.
I know, right? And that's what makes studying these cases so fascinating. Every case tells a story, but it also contributes to our overall understanding of how the law changes and adapts as technology advances and society's values change and, you know, as our ideas about what safe evolve.
Well said. And I think this case really makes us think about that balance between innovation and cost and safety. Companies obviously want to make new and exciting products that make money, but they also have to make sure those products are safe to use.
For sure.
It's almost like this constant struggle, isn't it?
It is.
But Norton v. Snapper shows how the legal system, you know, through these product liability lawsuits, can actually help maintain that balance. When companies know they can be held responsible for injuries, it makes them think more carefully about safety from the very beginning.
Absolutely. And what's interesting is that what we consider safe changes over time, right?
Uh-huh.
So what might have been okay back in 1981 when that Snapper mower was made might be totally unacceptable now.
Totally. Technology keeps changing. so what we consider safe has to change with it. What was once cutting edge can become outdated and even dangerous as new and better options come along.
Yeah, think about it. We have all these safety features in our cars now, like airbags and anti-lock brakes.
Yeah.
We just expect them to be there. And as technology keeps developing, we're going to see even more advanced safety features in everyday products.
So Norton V Snapper is like a reminder that safety isn't a one-time thing.
Right.
It's something that has to keep evolving as technology advances and we learn more about risk.
Exactly. And it also shows how important it is for consumers to be aware. It's not just about companies putting out products. It's also about consumers making their voices heard and influencing what companies make. If people demand safer products and support companies that prioritize safety and hold those who don't accountable, consumers can really make a difference in how safe products are in the future.
So it's not just up to companies to make safe products right. Consumers have to be involved too. They need to be informed and speak up for their own safety.
Right. And that brings up a really interesting question. If this case went to court today, would the outcome be the same? I mean, we have so much more advanced safety technology now. Would a jury still rule in favor of a company that chose not to use those features, even if they said it would cost too much?
That's a good question to think about. It really highlights that ongoing tension between innovation, cost, and safety. How much should we be willing to pay for safety? And at what point does a company's responsibility to protect people outweigh their desire to keep costs down?
Those are questions that are going to be debated in courtrooms and boardrooms for a long time to come. But Norton v. Snapper definitely serves as a reminder that companies shouldn't be sacrificing safety just to make more money.
All right, we're back and ready to wrap up Norton v. Snapper.
Yeah.
What a case, right? I feel like we've really gone deep into product liability law. But this case also raises some bigger questions, you know, about safety, responsibility, all that.
Yeah.
Especially with all the new technology we have these days.
Absolutely. It's not just about the legal stuff. It's also about how we balance innovation with safety. We want all these cool new products, but we also need to make sure they're not going to hurt anyone.
It's a tough balance, right?
It is. Companies want to be innovative. They want to make a profit, but they also have to keep people safe.
Uh-huh.
And this case really shows how the legal system can help make sure that happens. When companies know they could get sued if their products cause harm, they're more likely to think about safety right from the start.
So it's like a built-in incentive to be careful.
Yeah, exactly. And another thing to remember is that what we consider safe changes over time.
Right.
So what might have been considered an acceptable level of risk back in the 80s when that snapper mower was made could be totally unacceptable today.
Yeah, things change so fast with technology.
Think about all the safety features we have in cars now. Airbags, anti-lock brakes. We kind of take those for granted now, right? But those were huge innovations, and they've saved countless lives. And as technology keeps advancing, we can expect even more sophisticated safety features to become standard in everything we use.
So this case is like a reminder that safety is an ongoing thing. It's not like you just check a box and you're done. It has to constantly evolve as technology changes and we learn more about the risks involved.
Exactly. And it also shows how important it is for people to be informed and to speak up about safety concerns. It's not just on the companies to make safe products. Consumers have a role to play too. They can demand safer products, support companies that are doing things right, and hold those who aren't accountable. That can really drive change and make a difference in how products are designed and manufactured.
So it's a two-way street. Consumers have a right to expect safe products, but they also have a responsibility to be informed and to make their voices heard.
Exactly. And that leads to a really interesting question. What if Norton v. Snapper happened today?
Hmm.
With all the new safety technology we have now, would the outcome be the same? Would a jury still side with a manufacturer who chose not to use the latest safety tech, even if they argued it would make the product too expensive?
That's a great question. And it really highlights that ongoing tension between innovation, cost, and safety. It makes you think, how much are we willing to pay for safety? At what point does a company's duty to keep people safe outweigh their desire to keep costs down?
It's a tough question and one that will probably continue to be debated for years to come. But Norton v. Snapper really highlights the fact that companies can't just prioritize profit over people.
This has been such an insightful deep dive. I feel like we've all learned a lot about product liability, how to prove causation, and how our ideas about safety are always evolving.
I'm glad you found it helpful. It's been a pleasure discussing this case with you and our listeners.
And to everyone listening out there, stay curious, keep asking questions, and always advocate for your own safety.
Well, that's all the time we have for today's deep dive into Norton v. Snapper. It's a case that really makes you think, and hopefully it sparks some interesting conversations for you. Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and as always, keep diving deep.